Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
The Cretacians consider the Alviera Trace cultural treasures. Apparently, Porthos urinated on one of them.
And that's what they're insulted about?
It is understandable.
Well, maybe if they'd have bothered to read the genetic profile we sent, they'd have told us to leave the dog on the ship, and then he wouldn't have had an opportunity to pee on one of their precious trees.
I conveyed your sincerest apologies to the Chancellery. They're discussing possible acts of contrition.
Where the hell do you get off conveying my sincerest apologies? They're the ones who should be sorry.
I don't need to remind you that Commander Tucker is relying on us.
There are some things more important than plasma injectors.
Are you referring to your pride?
I'll tell you one thing, Subcommander. If anything happens to Porthos, I'll be the one watering their Alviera trees.
Okay, are we through effing and jeffing?
I don't think so.
And ready to move on to podcasting?
To actual content.
What's it like to jeff someone?
Well, I don't know. You know, maybe our listeners can write in and let us know.
The first time I heard that was on Toast of London, but then it seems like I've heard people say that more since then. And it's effing like, and are people just getting that from because Matt Berry made it up?
No.
Is that like a thing that people say?
That's a British slang as far as I understand.
Okay, yeah, that's the thing. See, I don't know all the British slang. I just think Matt Berry made stuff because I'm from America.
Well,
did he make that up?
We're from America.
Fellow.
We're from America, but our audience hails from all around the world.
True.
And what are they expecting? They're expecting the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Star Trek.
They're expecting us to announce the episode.
Start talking about Star Trek at some point.
Number. The episode number is 111. It's our 11th podcast episode.
11th birthday.
That's right.
Bilbo.
It's 111th
birthday. Just like that old
Hobbit birthday. If Gandalf was putting his eyebrow up when Bilbo disappeared, and then Gandalf was smoking that pipe, and he made his eyebrow go up in the movie, what sound do you think he was making? Because he wasn't making a sound in the movie.
Why would he have to be making an eyebrow?
What would that translate to sound? It'd be like, whoa? Or like...
Okay, I was like, what?
Like, if you had to translate that to sound,
like transpose
a look, an expression,
I don't know,
an aura, whatever you want to call it, into sound.
This is too complicated. This is too complicated. Oh.
Where do you come up with this stuff, man? Dan, where do you come up with this stuff?
Okay. All right. So,
I don't know, man. I just think about shit a lot, dude.
We're talking about
really deep.
An episode of Enterprise.
Enterprise. A Night in Sick Bay. As it happens.
Season 2, episode 5?
That is correct.
Okay, cool.
Did you notice that establishing shot of the Enterprise looked really shitty? Like, the CG was just really shitty.
It was kind of clunky, yeah.
On the copy I was watching, there was like a blur or something.
Well,
I don't know, because
something about the ship looked much less realistic than any of the previous Star Treks.
On what format are you viewing it?
On the TV format?
No, but Paramount Plus. Sort of streaming?
I watch it on Paramount Plus.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, that's how I watch it.
So you get to watch a commercial before it. A commercial for some other thing you have to watch.
Anyways, it's irrelevant. The point I'm making is that shot of all the ship shots in all of Star Trek,
ship shots.
Dating back to the ship first shape. One, before the Penelope has a protect... Penelope has a pickled protracting protector.
Yes.
Pistachio
good,
protection.
Good
pistachio
job with your plosives.
Penelope has a protractor pistachio protector.
Okay. There's a point in here somewhere.
Okay.
In There's
here.
A point in the
Even
pickled
in the original TOS, before any of the magical update effects happened, it still looked better than that CG shot of the Enterprise. It's because, and it's because I know the first one looks like a model, but, and I'm not saying models are better than CG all the time. They often are, well, but they're sometimes CG is better. It depends. But that CG of Enterprise looked way. It was like when you have bad CG, it looks way worse than anything else.
This is a transitionary period. The
Enterprise
as well.
Looks dumb anyway.
I just think they. I just don't, maybe it was
just a dumb looking.
Maybe it was the transitionary technology timeline because. We were just, it's like when video games got all into 3D, it's like there was 3D video games everywhere.
Well, they were using a lot of CGI in Deep Space Nine, and it, you're effectively arguing that CGI was better. I think it might be an artifact of the transfer that's being used on Paramount Plus and other places because, I don't know, I've seen episodes of Enterprise where it looked better. And to me, I got this impression that there was a bit of a goobliness in the transfer. I don't know, maybe if you get Blu-rays or something, it looks better. But, okay, so A Night in Six Bay. A Night in Seven Bay.
Doing the best I can.
Okay. This
episode had some lines.
We'll get to that. The first point I wanted to make was that this episode is one of those very divisive episodes, both among fans and critics, with some people loving it and some people not quite loving it. Understand why.
Archer's such a grumpy fuck through that whole episode.
But I like that. That's his character.
He's over the top grumpy.
He had a long day and his dog is dying. So he's pissed off.
Well, and he's horny.
He's his annoying dude. He's having this whole horny thing.
We'll discuss the focus on his horniness, which
kind of comes out of nowhere, to be honest.
Well, this was 2002. Yeah. This was par for the course in 2002, I think. But I just wanted to ask, what are your at least initial thoughts before our conversation? We can always change minds. What did you all think about this episode? Love it, hate it, or you're somewhere in the middle, which would be the minority?
I don't know that I have, which I think I am in the minority because I don't really have a strong, like, okay, so the one where they went to the desert planet,
directed by the same fella, David Straten,
who's the one that they
Desert went, Crossing
Desert Crossing is now that one was kind of boring. Right?
Yeah.
I like that one.
That episode is, the episode's good, but it's kind of boring. Episode like kept you entertained, like between, you know, Porthos being just the most adorable dog that you wanted to cry, like the entire episode.
Yeah.
And then you have sort of that weird sexual tension thing that kind of pops up halfway through the episode. You're like, what? And then he's grumpy, and then you get to be you're occupied by being mad at these dudes, and then for some reason they throw in weird like Denobulan grooming habits and like, the secret life of Phlox kind of shit going on too.
That was really what I liked. I wouldn't say I had a strong feeling either way about loving it or hating it, but I did think it was entertaining where you have it. It's almost like this just sort of side. This is a side episode where. It's like a bottle episode or something.
It is a bottle episode. They intended to save money on this one by sticking to the existing sets.
Like, what does the captain ever like spend that much time in sick bay? You know, he goes down there, so he doesn't know what's going on, and he's waking up at all these little noises of like there's crazy like toenail clipping and tongue scraping.
That's an odd couple setup. Basically.
Yeah, totally.
In some ways,
it made it seem like, and I know he doesn't live in sickbay, but it made him seem like he does lick and
but he does because like, hey, it wasn't a Freudian slip. Clarion
slip?
That's a Clarion slip.
A Clarion or a
licking
Valerian?
Polarian slip, right. Well, he did mess with his tongue, but because he was doing all this grooming and shit in sickbay, and so it made it seem at first like he lived there, because why would he so casually groom himself at sickbay?
If he was just there for
one night, which he was because of Porthos, like the Captain Archer didn't do any weird sort of like grooming thing, you know, you'd think he could have held off, but I mean, not that he should or shouldn't have, it's just, it was an interesting...
Different strokes for different cultures.
That we get such a personal sort of window.
Because he only sleeps every now and then, or there's a different...
He does that high hibernation phase.
How old are those guys? Those Denobulans.
I don't know. I think he's pretty old though.
I enjoyed.
It's because of the hibernation.
I enjoyed that aspect as well. I'm frankly with you, fellas. I fall in the middle category. It's neither love nor hate. There's a lot of ridiculous stuff in this episode. Some of it was ridiculous at the time. Arguably, some of it has grown more ridiculous with modern eyeballs set upon it. That being said, similar to you, Dan, I'm entertained the entire time. Mm-hmm. I've seen this episode many times, and even knowing how it ends, I'm enjoying pretty much every scene that's going on. Even the ones that are a little bit, make me a little uncomfortable or whatever, or weird me out, I still derive some enjoyment out of that. And a lot of that just comes from, you get these brilliant actors. You got Scott Bakula, you got John Billingsley getting to work, I think, more together in this episode than they did certainly up to this point, and perhaps from this point forward. I mean, they really get a lot of scenes together, and there's character development too, in a sense. We do learn about Phlox. Some of it is funny. Some of it is touching when he's talking about his family, for example.
There's a lot of backstory.
We learn about Archer. We learn about Porthos. But, you know, talking about Archer's whole being grumpy thing, to me, one of the things that sets Enterprise apart from most of the other, or all of the other Star Trek series, is that the captain has this grumpiness that the crew has to deal with and strategize around, right? You see that scene where Hoshi and T'Pol are sort of like, oh yeah, he's in one of his moods, basically, and they're like, all right, well, we'll have to.
And it's like, is there a chainsaw?
And it's not like that didn't happen to some extent, but it was different. I mean, Archer is just sort of prideful and impetuous and very human, very American.
There's still. It's still closer to our time. So yeah. They're more like people like nowadays. It's more, they're closer to our contemporary mindset. So they're going to be kind of terrible still. They're not going to be like, you know,
super enlightened.
The 22nd and 23rd century.
There were a few parts, like several parts throughout the whole thing, though, where I was just like, man, if I was a crew member, I'm not saying I would have talked back, but I would have felt the urge. Like T'Pol.
Man, fuck you, Captain.
T'Pol has.
Captain Archer, cool your jets. It's just a dog.
Cool your warp injectors.
T'Pol was
she gave it back to him.
Yeah, but she could have been. He was acting like a big baby the whole time. I don't know.
She's Vulcan though, so she wouldn't use that. She didn't use that phraseology, but she basically said that, right? She was really. Yeah. I really liked that scene where she basically calls him out for saying, you know, it's your pride. Is it your pride is wounded? Now she might not be entirely correct about that, because, as Jesse noted, there is the whole situation with Porthos. Phlox thinks he's not getting laid enough, which leaving aside the politics of that, the sexual politics of that, maybe that's a legitimate.
I do agree that that does come out of nowhere and you're not really expecting that.
Yeah, because really it seems like enough that, so with this other species, Denobulans, oh, by the way, supposed to, on,
is it Cretaceans?
On according to masttrek.fandom, which
masttrek?
I don't know, yeah, some other, it looks like alpha thing, but it says, according to this, it says they live 170 to 280 years. I don't know where they got that number. Okay. It could be total bullshit.
That sounds like a number I pulled right out of my ass.
Yeah, well, oh yeah, and friggin' they talked about Phlox's. He talked about his two sons. He doesn't see eye to eye with.
Yeah.
Do they ever go back to that?
Yes,
they do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they did. Yeah.
There is stuff with Dr. Phlox later on in relation to one of those sons in particular. Mm-hmm. I think, and I think it was a political disagreement.
So the Cretaceans.
They got awesome plasma injectors.
They got
awesome hair,
because you can run on four, but you can't run on three. And Trip Tucker the Third doesn't feel comfortable.
You've got four. You can run on. Four.
Yeah, I know. It's, come on, man. He's like,
but you can't run on three.
Captain. That's a hot dog, Captain. he was all like talking about, I don't feel comfortable. He put Tucker in an uncomfortable position. But we don't. So
he was running behind.
Yeah, so we.
He put Tucker in a bind.
Mm. Oh, shit. So
can't go warp five.
This is one of those episodes where the alien species is being unreasonable and being rude.
Unreasonable from the perspective.
From our perspective. Right. Exactly.
And specifically from Archer's perspective. Nobody else seems terribly put off by this. And everybody, certainly T'Pol says this, but you kind of get the vibe that other people are like, why the hell did he need to bring Porthos down there? I know the dog wants to run around in a park.
It's pretty.
But maybe
non-standard,
like the next mission.
I think, well, part, but you could say, like, one reason why someone would do that it wouldn't even be, because she was saying you fail to see the consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. You could also say that it's not that he doesn't fail to see it. It's at some kind of like subconscious level or whatever, if you believe in that shit. But because what was the first reason? The first reason they got offended because he was eating in front of them. Yes. Right. And so maybe he's still pissed about that. And then that's why he brought Porthos down, to kind of be like,
subconsciously, fuck you. I'm going to bring my dog to piss on your tree.
Yeah, or yeah, like, I'll do what I want. You're not going to fucking be an asshole to me. Like,
there's not a lot of
Eric Cartman style.
And that would be a prideful thing, but it wouldn't be a not realizing the, you know, consequences thing. But I can see someone doing that.
It's not too many pets in Star Trek.
Yeah.
A little bit here and there. But like, who would you imagine, like, who else would have a dog? Like Riker would have a dog.
Maybe? Picard has a dog in retirement.
Oh, that's true. He does,
but that's in retirement, not on the ship. One. And he's got the fish for a few seasons of TNG. But Stewart hated having. He was like, "Why would you have fish in a tank? That's awful."
Yeah, nobody would take, even if they had a dog. Like, you're not taking them on the away mission. Like, yeah. You wouldn't take like Spot on the away mission,
right? I mean, they just sit in that room all day long.
I think the other thing to point out is that if
some asshole has a bird,
If Kirk or somebody, Kirk or Picard or Sisko or Janeway or Burnham or Saru, or any of these folks, if they had a pet.
Saru is like an alien already. He ain't a pet.
is that how it works?
He was like Giorgio's pet or something.
Damn.
Hypothetically.
He was.
Hypothetically.
In the mirror universe.
Were any of these folks to have pets that they kept on board and that they liked taking around, if they had encountered a similar situation, I think this is the key difference. If they had taken their pet down, say they asked for permission and all that other jazz, whatever it was, they'd taken their pet down, same scenario happens, dog pees
on your sacred tree
by accident, not subconscious, you know, bitterness, it's just an accidental thing. I think each of those captains, when they heard about it, would have immediately been like, oh shit, I'm so sorry. Tell me exactly what I need. This is, I feel so terrible. That's the difference. I think the difference with Archer.
Not threatening to pee on their tree.
Yes. Exactly.
We'll see who's peeing where.
And that was a pretty violent threat. The way Archer said that line of like, you know, I forget exactly how he phrased it, but basically like it might be.
If anything happens to Porthos, I'll be the one watering the Alvira tree.
Exactly. The tone he said that was basically like, I'm going to fucking cut your dick off.
Well, So we see from the aliens' viewpoint why they would be offended, right? But in a situation like this, I kind of hope that they would present both sides of it, though, because we understand how it can be misconstrued. Good it's like, point. Oh, I didn't realize what I did offended you. But I would like to see it from their perspective, too, is they didn't realize that they were offending us. Like, make it more less focused around the humans not understanding and more.
So we've got two points floating around here. One point is that in-universe... I'm totally okay with Archer because it's pre-Federation, because it's not yet to the Enlightened level. I like that there's a difference in this character. He's responding differently, and this is not new in throughout most of the series until the end of Enterprise. Archer is often responding in ways that do not match up to the future. And in doing that, and in experiencing consequences, he adjusts his behavior over time that evolves into 100 years later is more whatever. Point one.
Well, I like that. I like that.
Yes, that's point one. But point two, Dan, I think is really good in that a different way to tell the story would be to have more of the alien side, more of the Cretacean.
Yeah.
Is that right? Cretacean?
Cartassans?
Cretacean.
Jurassic.
Cretacean. Well, because why didn't they look at the genome? Like, you know, I would like to, I know it's maybe not the point, and maybe
maybe they did and they just, their database whatever. They weren't necessarily, weren't presenting it as if it was like, oh yeah, they'd automatically know
that guy's going to pee on the tree. Yeah. Right.
But I know that the episode, maybe it wasn't important to the points this episode was trying to make, but I still couldn't help but wonder, why didn't they look over the genome? That plays a big part in
fucking idiots.
Because that plays a big part in this misunderstanding.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it brings up the very important question, which I'll put to you, Dan. What are the points this episode's trying to make?
Yeah.
there are some points in here. I don't know if they're all compatible with each other, but what are some of the points you think this episode's trying to make?
If you need something from somebody else, like, just do what they say, I guess.
Wait. Okay. I get what you're saying, because initially when you first said that, I was thinking of it in terms of Archer being horny, terms of getting the injector from the alien species.
By the way, what was the Enterprise giving back to the Cretaceans? They didn't talk about
nothing
that either.
Nothing as far as I know. Yeah, he kept talking about sharing.
Yeah, sharing, right.
Why won't they share it with us? He didn't say trade.
Yeah, I mean, and back then, you know, they were talking about, it's a common courtesy to sync your clocks to our clocks.
Did we have some kind of time versus planet standard time?
Yeah. Now, is there some kind of subspace internet they use to like find this information? Did they have that kind of information back then about the Cretaceans?
They probably wouldn't have.
How were they supposed to know?
T'Pol figured it out. T'Pol just, and again, do they have time zones? Do they have universal time down there?
She didn't know. T'Pol didn't say anything about them syncing their time to their time.
I thought when he met her on the bridge, because she wasn't on duty yet. Like she,
yeah. Remember, like, it isn't a requirement. It's a simple curve.
He encounters T'Pol and is like, "Why are you awake?" And she's basically saying like, "Well, I'm going by their time."
Right? Well, the first time we are introduced to this idea is Hoshi is talking to the head Cretaceans guy, who was and then he was the one saying that he was bitter because that they didn't sync their time. So T'Pol didn't apparently seem to know. That guy apparently was on the net Quantum Leap, which is interesting because Scott Bakula. His name is Von Armstrong.
Oh, and Von Armstrong's all the fuck over Star Trek. He's played so much stuff in Star Trek, including on Enterprise. He plays the Admiral, what's his name? Who's on Enterprise repeatedly. Maximilian
Armstrong.
Why can't
Stretch Armstrong?
No. Anyway, Von Armstrong, he played a Cretaceous before.
Cretaceous. He played a Cretaceous before.
Charles Trip Tucker III.
Charles Trip Tucker III. Captain, I don't feel comfortable with three, but I only feel comfortable with four.
With four.
I just don't feel comfortable.
He's all over Enterprise. He was gone TNG going back to season one, often playing Klingons, other aliens. I think he's had maybe 14, 15 roles. Possibly more over the course of Star Trek, all the series, Voyager, I think Deep Space Nine, a few, but you get to see him the most on Enterprise, which is pretty cool.
So anyways, so I'm trying to figure out in relation to what we learned, because I mean, they didn't seem to indicate in the episode that there was any way for them to know this stuff about this species ahead of time. So if there was something about like, oh, you got this information, they didn't bother to look and they disregarded it and then were rude to these people, then you could say, okay, well, they should have taken more time. I don't know. Yeah, you're asking what lessons did they teach in this episode? I'm not sure. Aliens, it's another episode where alien species don't understand humans and their love for pets.
And multiple flocks doesn't.
Yeah, T'Pol takes the more concerning approach of like she looks at them as lower life forms, which is weird. It's like you understand what they're saying, but at the same time, like, what is this like lower life form shit? Why am I not allowed to? But
quadrupeds, that was calling subservient flocks is something about your subservient
and see,
quadruped.
Well, I think Phlox was making a different point. Phlox was calling Archer out, saying humans are hypocrites, because he's like, oh, you claim to love these things so much that you're fucking keeping my ass awake all night. You say like you're more advanced than the Denobulans, right? Because because you're saying us Denobulans, we don't understand what it's like to love a pet or whatever. And
they're eating their lemurs.
And Phlox is basically saying you don't love these things. You treat them as your servant or subservient. You yourself don't treat them as equals.
Yeah.
You know. And so I think whereas T'Pol took the stance of like fuck pets, they're gross. Phlox was like, humans, you're hypocrites for what you say you love versus how you treat the things that you love. So all this stuff that's happening, you could just say like he's having a bad fucking day, right? But then out of nowhere, he sort of throws in this whole like, I think you want to have sex with T'Pol. And it makes sense from there on out. But the only indication we got that there was a friction between him and T'Pol was the weird treadmill scene. But the treadmill scene, that didn't necessarily put across the message that he was trying to impress.
And it was a pretty standard, bog standard of that era. People on treadmills having an argument.
Yeah.
That was like a thing.
They did that a lot.
And, yeah, and they were talking about his pride and why he wouldn't give in to the Cretaceans because of his pride. At the same time, he's speeding up his treadmill to try to keep up with T'Pol.
Yeah.
So the obvious conclusion to me is that, oh, this is another example of his pride. But no, they're trying to say he was actually trying to impress T'Pol because he secretly wants to have sex with her or something.
So there's some good stuff here and some not so good stuff. I think part of the problem is that they have conflicting and overlapping sort of arguments and motivations for what's getting Archer all riled up. Is it his pride? Is it his dying fucking dog? Is it because he's horny and horny specifically for T'Pol? So that's complicated.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there are some really subtle things in here. Like the scene you talk about, T'Pol is talking about pride. Archer, again, it's subtle. He's being prideful by putting his speed up. We know that Vulcans can fucking outlast humans running. We got to presume that, right? And so when T'Pol turns off her machine and walks out, and she's like, I guess I can't keep up with you. She's basically saying, of course I can fucking keep up with you, you dumbass. I'm a Vulcan, but I'm not prideful. So I don't mind you thinking you're faster than I am and have more
energy. Yeah, but she was also obviously trying to give him a little barb, a little jab. So
yeah,
that
but
is-
the barb is... See how not prideful I am that I'm going to state that I'm, oh yeah, I guess I just can't keep up with you. And I'm not bothered by that, even though it's not even true. My point is that it's more acute because of the background knowledge that Vulcans have better physical abilities than humans.
Right.
That she's just like, fuck you, man. I'm done.
Yeah. And she's,
and it doesn't bother me to, you can think you're outran me all
and,
you want.
And well, and she's, and I mean, she's
not going to affect her decision making. She's getting the fuck out of
she's
it.
She's smart and clever enough to know that that's like the true insult though. Yeah. So she is acting out of some sort of desire to stab Archer in the brain balls or whatever. But, cause that was a pretty snarky remark. She could have just, you know, kept running, but
snark
she,
remark.
Well, I think, if we pull back for a moment to the production of this episode, it can maybe help explain some of both the positives and negatives that we find in here. This episode was written by Rick Berman and Brandon Braga.
Those guys.
Okay, so
Brandon Braga is traditionally known to come up with some pretty cool concepts, but both he and Rick Berman don't have the greatest history, at least in the tabloids, when it comes to respect for women and not sexualizing women. And so when I see that they wrote this episode and I see the episode, what immediately comes to mind is that what they've done is they've presented as the premise, as the assumption that Archer is working with T'Pol. T'Pol is so hot. I think they wanted to explain to the audience. They were like, the audience is clearly going to think, how are T'Pol and Archer not just fucking? How are they not just fucking all the time? We've got to have an entire story explaining why they're not fucking, because otherwise they would be fucking. Because I think that's the attitude that Rick Berman and Brandon Braga take is, how could you not fuck T'Pol? How could you have a professional relationship with her and not fucking fuck her? I think that is what they think. And that they're like, oh, we gotta lay it out here. Why they're not fucking, and then put it in this sort of lighthearted story.
Yeah, the last scene with them together when she says, you know, it's good that you're my superior officer, that we're not in a position to allow ourselves to become attracted to one another, hypothetically.
That was awkward.
If we were, the friction you speak of could be more problematic. Right. So it was awkward. It was playing that playful, sexy music from like the 1950s or whatever, you know, where it's just like, you know, and now, but what she's saying, she feels that sexual tension too, or was she just telling him to cool his jets?
So I was questioning that as well. But what made this scene particularly uncomfortable for me was not just that it was sort of an awkward interaction, but I'm sure this is not how it was intended by Berman and Braga. But I read this as a subordinate female speaking to her supervisor and trying in as politically adept a way as possible to convey, of course we're not going to fuck, right? Because of the rules and shit, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Like kind of like the way you get the boss who's been a little handsy to stop being handsy.
So it was she was just telling him to cool his jets because she doesn't feel that way.
I read it that way. And the thing is while I don't think Brandon and Braga, Berman and Braga, I should say, Rick Berman and Brandon Braga, while I don't think they intended it that way, I have the feeling that they had this exact same experience with subordinate women.
Oh, definitely.
And that they didn't understand that those women were being like, in the politest way possible, because I don't want to get fired, I'm trying to set it up so you stop fucking harassing me. But that they verbatim wrote that into a script thing, like, oh yeah, that works pretty well. Yeah, because it is a good point. You know, it does, it would cause inefficiencies to the production process if we were fucking awkward. Very awkward.
Yeah, I was trying to find out. There was one part where, what was the line he was using? How if we deny our sexual attractions or whatever? He was talking, what was it? When he was basically saying we act in unpredictable ways or something like that.
Yeah, they were, and you know, you could argue that in some ways this is, in the time period, it's helpful to sort of get out, you know, another form of getting out into the public media sphere, this idea that sexual harassment and this sort of thing is not great. Although here it's presented not as sexual harassment, it's presented as mutually consensual relationship between superior and subordinate, and how that might be problematic. Whereas in later Star Trek iterations, that seems to be less problematic. There are less prohibitions on that because they're more Gene Roddenberry, who's no paragon of virtue himself. No. But imagining a future where intimate relations would not necessarily impact people's professional capability.
This is a line where he goes, when one person believes their sexual attraction towards another person is inappropriate, they often exhibit unexpected behavior.
Yeah.
And then he goes, makes some comment about inordinate anger towards comparisons made between their ship and their beagle. But whatever. But I like
Bugle.
Bugle, right. Even when he said, when Bugle and Archer was like, Beagle! He was being like, calm down, man. I know. It's like, can you just fucking chill out? It's like when somebody's complaining all night, eventually you just want to be like, just shut the fuck up, man. I get it.
I agree. And it was funny because, you know, you've seen other scenes or maybe experience in real life where you like go to the doctor and they're all like, yeah, we're going to get your gallbladder fixed up straight away. And you're like, no, it's my pancreas, dude. You're looking at the wrong fucking thing. Okay, real quick, why don't we take a quick break and then come back and continue the conversation?
Okay.
We'll be right back. All right, we're back.
So
it's got Star Trek.
That was a really quick break.
It's sure got Star was. Trek, the podcast. But coming this summer, it's got podcast, the movie.
One thing I didn't...
Rated R.
I was basically trying to say when I like...
You like?
I liked when he was saying...
Are you trying to say that you like?
When Phlox was saying, you often exhibit unexpected behavior when you don't know how to handle your attraction to someone else. I thought that was like, you know, well put. I thought that was a...
There's a lot that
I thought that was really solid, because it's true. When you take these sort of urges you have and completely twist and deny them and do something unhealthy with them, like you act erratically and you don't even realize it. Or I should speak in them using my I statements, but you know, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh no, that's an example of
yes, I do.
This episode has so much good. There's a lot of good tidbits in there, and. I think the way things are put together and mashed together, maybe they could have done things a little bit differently, but there are good things in here. I thought that Phlox's advice to simply be aware of it, and again, pop psychology, no background here, but that to me seemed like pretty decent advice. I don't know if it's the 100% correct advice, because I am not a psychologist, but it seemed to me that it's a different way than you would see on an old sitcom, for example, right? Mm-hmm. It's not tell her you love her and want to fuck her, and it's not ignore the issue and let it fester.
Just do the breast you that you can.
It's be aware of it. And I think that can be applied in a lot of situations where there's an issue that is not immediately resolvable, that being aware of the issue is one way to mitigate against any problems with it, even if that issue has come out of the blue from nowhere.
Well, somewhere in the middle of the show.
Phlox apparently,
but she's so hot. How could you not think she's hot? She's so hot.
Why aren't you already fucking her right now?
Phlox apparently has 6 degrees in interspecies veterinary medicine.
He doesn't have to sleep that much, so he can learn.
He got a degree in dentistry, hematology, botanical pharmacology.
Ooh, yeah, that one's the coolest.
Okay. And then apparently he has a degree in psychiatry because, like, mm-hmm. Archer's like, what, do you have a degree in psychiatry too? He's like, absolutely. Yep. And do you think he has a degree in psychology? Because that's one thing they're always doing on shows. They're always talking about psychiatrists.
There's a difference between the two.
I know there's a difference. Yeah. And the difference is one was allowed to prescribe medication and the other isn't.
And more, so they put more fundamentally, the
psychologists talk to you more. Psychiatrists just see it for a couple minutes.
They also have different mechanisms. It's not just that psychiatrists can prescribe medicine and psychologists do not, but there are different philosophies and mechanisms of action that they work on.
Yeah.
And that's why psychiatrists, one of their mechanisms of action are physical issues, chemical imbalances, things like that.
Electroshock therapy.
That's why I was saying
combined with counseling.
Psychology, if you're talking about talking to someone for an hour, that's going to be a psychologist. A psychiatrist, you're going to talk to them for a few minutes and then they'll throw some drugs at you or something.
They'll shove them down.
They'll throw them right at you.
I think that's actually often misused in a lot of...
Throw them at the walls, fetch it.
In a lot of TVs and movies, they
the distinction is not always made clear.
But
maybe these days it's less of a problem.
So Phlox has at least 11 degrees. Now, do you think these are your standard, like, two-year graduate degree programs, or how long does it take for someone to become?
What do you mean? Most of these are if you're comparing it to human desire, most of these degrees, the ones that are medical degrees, are 4 years of medical school, maybe subsequent ones.
So you don't think they're just certificates that you get in the mail?
You can shunt some of them off. Does he have to do residency? Does he have to do multiple years of residency in these specializations?
Do you think he has to take a medicine boot camp where he just goes for like 6 months and he learns all there is to know about it and gets a certificate?
I am annoyed by one particular thing here where he talks about, you know, Archer's like, oh, you're not just like a regular old doctor.
People doctor.
And he starts listing these things. Dentistry, okay, like dentistry is a different specialty. Still a people specialty. Hematology is
medical. Yeah.
That's like saying you're a gastroenterologist. You know, it's just a medical specialty that's for people.
Right. I thought you were a doctor. Well, I'm also a gastroenterologist.
It was a little weird. I was like, I don't think you'd see that happen these days. I think
but I just have a bachelor's
in think they needed a, this was pre-Google, right? I know kids.
Yeah,
I know kids. It's hard to believe. This was Alta Vista days. But they weren't using it. They weren't looking up on Alta Vista what the list of medical specialties are. Non-human medical specialties.
So how long does it take someone to become a doctor, a full doctor?
Denobelian doctor. Well, I'm talking about takes longer.
Well, I'm talking about on human land. In human land, how long does it take?
It depends on the specialty, but you have 4 years of medical school.
Four
you have
five.
Residency, which right. can vary a number of years. And you have fellowship that happens as well, where now you're a doctor, but you're still learning. So it can be 10, 12, 15 years, depending on the specialty you've selected. Surgery can take longer. Some specialties take a lot longer.
Sometimes it's just political.
But you could argue that once you've got the one, maybe some of the other ones don't take quite as long. I don't know.
When he was talking about
a podiatrist.
When he went to Archer and said, you want to talk about T'Pol again or whatever? Archer's like, no. And he like closes the curtain.
He slams the curtain shut.
Yeah. Like, that's another example of such an asshole sort of like grumpy move, you know? And then actually Archer oversteps the line at one point when he insults, the entire Denobulan species and their view on love. He not only does that, where he was being specious and mean, he fucking grabs him by the arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He grabs Phlox by the arm. He assaulted him.
Yeah,
like, Archer's, that is way inappropriate.
Archer does and by design, is a hothead and physical, overly physical.
I like when Phlox is like, well, I can't speak for the others, but on behalf of myself, I accept. when he said T'Pol told me you were incapable of apologizing, Archer gave a look. And was that was it like, am I really that much of an asshole? Or was the look more like, oh, she's thinking about me? You know what I'm saying?
That's part of the problem with this episode. And it's a minor problem because, again, I thoroughly enjoy this episode. I like it every time I watch it. But the issues in terms of how the episode is constructed are that there's no way to understand and disaggregate the different inputs into Archer's attitude and situation here. Right. Again, dying dog, horny for first officer, pissed off at arrogant in his view, aliens. Oh, by the way, they've also just been flying around in the middle of nowhere for a long time. And even if he enjoys doing that, I mean, yeah, it could have some effects there. So it's like
humans haven't been out in space that much.
They, so how do we pull those apart? How do we at by the end of the episode, we do not know what was actually the main contributor, or was it supposed to be all of them? Is he only in a better mood? Because he gets to be in a better mood prior to finding out that Porthos is feeling better, right? He's already started to like turn things around a little bit when
he
it comes
some
to the
space weed.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, get some snake weed.
There was some stash of
yeah,
space
I mean,
weed.
This episode seemed more about pride than having the sex flusters. You know,
that's the pride is what sort of stands out the most. Even though a lot of the attention seems to be paid on the sex flustering thing, at least in the second half of the sex flustering.
Your dog's died. Some people are being obnoxious about, diplomatic and you got to do all this thing and we got to do this thing.
Your lips.
But you want to have sex with T'Pol.
So I did.
Your lips. Your lips.
The humor of the I'm doing the breast I can.
You know, I actually made that slip once. I actually did that once when I was in high school.
With a lady.
That's hilarious, dude.
With a lady woman.
It was just, I made that, I did, like, if you think that stuff doesn't happen and is impossible, I'm
with a person who presented as female?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify.
It was in high school, I felt really embarrassed, and I felt really shitty about it, and it was a total accident.
Understanding that it was an accident, was it an accident that others would feel was justified?
Yeah,
I'm really trying not to.
You're not naming any names.
No, forget about names. I'm just trying not to over-sexual. I don't want to be like, oh yeah, she got that girl had big titties.
That girl in high school had big titties.
What I'm trying not to say, what I'm trying to avoid saying is like, that girl had big titties. And that resulted in you making the error. That's what I'm trying to avoid saying.
Yeah. Well, now you've said it, so there's really no way I can answer that.
But merely as an illustration of my point. Yeah. This should in no way reflect on me as a person.
Maybe she just had like a, revealing shirt.
Yes.
It could have been any number of those things.
It could have been a combination.
Jesse said it in a
the
much
point
more
is,
it
I
could
am
have been the fact that you were 14 years old.
I am anecdotal evidence that it can happen to a person.
You are anecdotal. Sorry.
That it can happen to a person.
Yes.
I am that
person.
I am
it
that.
Can. You represent
you that
evidence
person.
That, and that's what, and to be clear, if it isn't clear to the audience, we are all dudes. So we are the audience.
Dude-ular.
We are the audience that Rick Berman and Brandon Braga assumes are watching
they
this.
They assume it.
Now, we are clever enough to see through some of this stuff.
It's the first time
we're about to see through P.O. And R2.
Yep.
Go,
come on. Come on.
P.U.
Come on, you started
more like
it.
R2-P-U.
Okay. It's fine. It's fine.
They're words. They sound like other words. Has nothing to do with anything we said other than that.
All right. But okay. So the other issue that with this episode is, again, this is an issue related to era and time, which is it's era. Super heteronormative. Era. It's super heteronormative. And I think Enterprise often was more heteronormative than even TNG or Deep Space Nine.
Right. So Hoshi.
They're closer to our era.
At the beginning, Hoshi is rubbing T'Pol. That's very, wow. And then T'Pol's rubbing Archer. It's like, wow. And then who's Archer going to rub?
The dog.
The dog. So, I mean, I wasn't quite sure what to make of that.
How many times do you see them disinfectantly rubbing each other? It's like in the pilot.
It happens fairly a few times. In episodes, in seasons one and two, it's free
because that's just
in that scene
not always as lascivious sometimes as like the pilot is kind of fucked up and ridiculous at least and the pilot as we discussed in episode
episode
7 of the podcast or something the pilot they're all like well as long as we show that Trip Tucker and Captain Archer have like fat bulges then it's okay to show the chicks naked
right.
Like they're still doing that here they zoom in on Captain Archer's dick and balls
and did you notice Hoshi and Archer are both wearing conservative logical underwear right even though they get to a good shot at Archer's package
Starfleet
yeah
but
it's
like
a
what
tight tight underwear.
But what T'Pol is wearing is absolutely ridiculous in comparison.
Yes.
It's not logical.
No. A lot of what the costume the designers put on T'Pol is insane.
Yeah.
It's nice to look at from the male gaze perspective. However, it's ridiculous because it's like, oh, wait, why is it only this one particular person that they're doing that with?
Yeah. And then he has the dream. And of course, there's the scene of the woman in Star Trek without her top on, but facing the back. Yes. Like they do that every once in a while.
Sexy back.
They did that with Seven of Nine when there was the Q's kid or whatever. He mm-hmm. like did that, took off Seven of Nine's clothes or whatever. That's mm-hmm. Yeah, you know.
Well, the heteronormativity also presents itself where Phlox, for example, says, "When was the last time you banged a chick?"
That's you know, true. Right. He does.
He uses nicer terms for it, but that's basically what he's saying. Now. To be fair, you could argue, well, Phlox is familiar with Captain Archer and maybe knows his sexual identity and what he's usually into. But still, it stands out to me from a meta perspective watching the show. The assumption is Captain Archer wants to bang a chick. He didn't say when was the last time you had intimate relations. It's when was the last time you had intimate relations with a woman.
Yeah.
Right. And furthermore,
with a human woman.
When Phlox is describing what I know, I had no doubt in 2002 and 2001 when they first described Phlox as living in a polyamorous or polygamous, you know, it's a polyamorous relationship. Other people might refer to it as polygamous. Polygyny is probably the most appropriate. It's complicated. Anyway,
anthropological that sounds offensive somehow.
Polygyny?
Yeah. Polygynies?
Polygynies.
Polygynies. Hey, look at these. polygamy is husband with multiple women. Polygyny is a woman with multiple husbands. This is more complicated than that. But the point being.
Polygynies.
Polygyny. Okay. Forget about it. The point I'm trying to make.
What I'm saying is,
you ever have those dreams where like you got to get to like an appointment or something and like there's all sorts of like traffic and stuff and then you get out of your car and then it just you feel like you're walking through molasses?
Yeah, I've had that molasses.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, that's it just starts out with just the walking.
But that's me making this point right now. Walking through molasses.
That's a lot of this podcast.
The point I'm making is that when Phlox describes to Archer the details of his culture's formal marriage rites, right? Phlox says, I have three wives and they each have two husbands.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I have three partners and they each have two partners. Mm-hmm. Or and why does he get three wives but the wives only get two husbands? There's not only a heteronormativity, but there's also a patriarchal. There's a masculinity.
I did notice
we're sharing people. All these chicks. Yeah,
the masculine get one more than each of the women do.
Yeah, I did notice that there was one more, and he was like, I love all of them, even the husbands.
And then Archer was like, Archer looked like he was going to vomit. But even though Phlox was not making the implication that he had sexual relations with the husband, he was just saying he misses them.
Right.
Where is Archer from? Is he from like Illinois or something?
I forget where Nebraska. I should know where he's from.
Omaha.
Kirk is from Iowa.
Yeah, that's okay.
Archer was saying there it sounded all very complicated, and Phlox was like, why else be polygamous? And I guess that was a funny line, meant to be funny. He's like, there's the only reason you would be polygamist is because it's complicated. Was he just making a joke, or was that?
Yeah, that's even though this is 2002, that's a real late 90s joke of like, you know, it's fun to have just a bunch of people arguing and drama and sexual tension, you know, Melrose Place and whatnot. Right. Anyway, that's how I took that. Mm-hmm. But there are a few other examples, of course, in terms of and nothing new to Star Trek, but it's sort of acute on Enterprise is the directing of the show is sort of through the male gaze as well. You were referring to the gel decontamination scenes. There's a couple gel decontamination scenes. There's the real one, and then there's the dream one. The dream one's supposed to be all sexy and horny. So, okay, you can argue, okay, he's having a fucking horny dream, so that's why it's all horny. But the real one was kind of horny too, right?
Yeah.
It was less horny, but it was still...
Like I said, it was Hoshi rubbing down T'Pol, rubbing down Archer, and the only thing that kind of broke it up is, like I said, when Archer was rubbing Porthos, I was like, okay, I don't know what they're trying to get at with this scene. Not that I think they should be going for something either way. It was just like, at first it seemed like they were going for this really in-your-face sexual thing.
Yeah.
That's what they were going for. And then they threw the dog in, and I was like, is this part of their, like, what message are they trying to send with this? You know, so, I don't know. Not that...
Also,
I don't know if they probably just didn't think about it that hard. They were just like, oh, sexiness. And
there wasn't really any real resolution to the...
You wouldn't see Archer rubbing Chip Tucker, probably.
I would like to.
Oh, yes.
This was the Star Trek show that was trying to branch out more and sort of bro it up. And
they were definitely trying to bro it up.
Yeah. Nerd it down.
Yeah. Nerd it. We're going to bro up and fucking nerd down.
So, like, you know, it was...
Star Trek is cool. We got chicks with big ass titties and dudes with hard cocks.
Yep.
And a dog. You can drink beers with that dog. They're hanging out, drinking beers, eating hamburgers, watching movies.
I like when Archer Phlox was talking about doing the surgery on the dog, and he was just like, they had to kill a Calrissian. What was it?
Calrissian.
Check it out, dude. Because
I'm
Billy D. Williams, at least at one point, was a neighbor with Herbie Hancock.
Okay.
Chameleon. Herbie Hancock.
Oh, okay.
Calrissian was played by William DeCenter.
Whoa,
Williams.
That's like one of those just those weird things, like how Lorenzo Music played Garfield
and then Bill Murray played Garfield.
I came up with that because I'm a nerd.
No, well, that's you're a genius.
That is brilliant.
I love when people
I had no idea.
And I only know that because I was at NPR one time with my dad, and they were interviewing Herbie Hancock. He was in the fucking studio, and he said, yeah, like somebody said something about, I don't know how Billy D. Williams came up, but he was like, yeah, he's my neighbor. Like we're the same age or something.
I can honestly say I thought you were. I didn't know where you were going.
I thought it was a total non sequitur, and that's what that.
Oh,
that's
no, I had this in my notes, and I'm glad you brought it up.
The mark of a true genius is when they say something and everyone's like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Why are you mentioning Billy D. Williams?"
I'm glad you brought up the Calrissian chameleon.
So they when Archer gets all mad at Phlox for, you know, he doesn't think Phlox is taking this seriously. He goes, this is Porthos, my beagle, my pal. That's funny. You remember that scene in do you remember that? This isn't coming across quite as funny as I meant it to be. What was it? It was when Matt Berry goes in the vampire show. He goes, my good time boy. That's what I thought Archer was saying.
I can see that. No, that's fun. Yeah, I mean, I
totally fucking butchered.
We can talk. We should talk briefly about the whole Porthos business because, you know, Porthos was a cool addition to Enterprise. It was unusual for a captain to have a pet. And it's one of those things where at the same time, it was unusual in the context of Star Trek. But once Archer's got Porthos, you're like, yeah, where the fuck doesn't the captain have a pet? That kind of makes sense. That's kind of awesome to have a dog to hang out with you while you're going on adventures and stuff like that.
What does that dog do all day, though?
Well, so there's a couple things about Porthos. First, this whole thing where Archer, what do you think about this whole story where Archer was like, all right, so I had an ex-girlfriend. I had a girlfriend and her mom like had beagles and I really liked the beagles. And then I broke up with that chick, but then I like hung out with her. I kept in touch with her mom. And then her mom like gave me like a dog.
I thought it was a little unnecessary.
Well, I wasn't sure if they were trying to like make that story complicated to increase the veracity of the anecdote. Because, you know, a more simple anecdote would simply be like, yeah, I like beagles, or I rescued a beagle, or whatever.
Right.
This whole thing. And then I was wondering, I was like, I mean, my first reaction to him is like, oh yeah, I still kept in touch with my ex-girlfriend's mom. At first I was like, oh, that's weird. And then I was like, I don't want to say that's weird. That's fucked up for me to say it's weird. It's gotta be, I'm sure it's okay, but I just want to admit that, because I'm sure I'm not the only one that like listened to that story and was like, oh, that's, well, that's an interesting scenario, and you ended up with the dog out of it. It was just a weird. I mean, it's cool. It's cool in the character sense. It's character building. We know more about Archer. We know that he has had at least one girlfriend, and he broke up with that girlfriend, but he still kept touch with her mom.
Yeah, I know that. The only thing I could think that
he's a dog man
is basically like you were saying, it was making it seem like he really loves beagles and he's a very personal reason to do so. Yeah, but the side effect was yeah, why was he keeping in contact with this woman's mom? And also,
he wanted
I was
to get a dog out of it.
He said he's had that dog since 6 weeks, and I was like
6 years.
Since he was
6 weeks old.
6 weeks old. So I was looking on the internet here because I thought that seemed a bit young. It's
usually 8 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, 8 weeks is what.
But that's if you're getting it from a breeder.
But I think I don't think it matters where you get it from.
I should say yes. Usually, that's 8 weeks is when they've weaned.
Yeah, right.
They've weaned.
But kittens, apparently cats are 12 to 14 weeks.
How long was he waiting for that dog to have a litter between his breakup?
That's what we don't know. We don't have that information.
Well, anyway, so the dog...
And how old was this girl that he was seeing?
Maybe the...
Because he's a fucking captain.
I don't think he was then.
Did they break up because she went to college or
she
something?
She was still in college. He was just a lieutenant commander.
So I think Porthos maybe has some like mommy issues, maybe, you know, because he got separated.
Taken away a little bit early.
Too young.
No, Porthos seems pretty well adjusted.
Yeah.
The other things to talk about Porthos is, so the Porthos dog, the main dog we see here is a dog named Breezy.
Are you talking about the actor?
The actor dog.
Oh, that's his name.
Apparently, they always had two dogs. There was
like the Olsen twins.
They got two dogs.
Yes, it's exactly like the Olsen twins. They're interchangeable.
not anymore.
At one point, they
were. In the first season, Breezy was the backup to another dog, who I can't recall the name of. And then
Sneezy.
And then I don't know what happened to the other dog, but something happened to him. And then Breezy became the main dog. And there was another backup dog that was, you know, took over for Breezy. But they talked about how this episode did present some challenges because, for example, in the decontamination chamber scene, that's like a four-walled set. Mm-hmm. And so according to Memory Alpha and some interviews I read with some of the behind the scenes people, the dog trainer was tricky because the dog trainer, like usually the dog can see the dog trainer, mm-hmm. and is like the dog trainer is like doing shit behind the camera to get the dog to do what it wants, what they want it to do. But because the design of the decontamination chamber is like enclosed, that the dog had to be able to perform without seeing the trainer, or at least seeing the trainer as well. And the other thing they had to do, which was, commented upon at the time when this episode came out, was there were at least two fake Porthos props, because a lot of the time Porthos had to look, you know, be in that little, remember later,
you're talking about like when he was on his stomach with his paws outstretched. Yes. Was that a Porthos statue?
It was both. Sometimes it was actual Porthos or Breezy, and other times it was the statue. And the way you can tell is if you see Porthos and you're horrified because it looks like you're looking at a monstrous dead dog that's just looked at Medusa.
that's
the prop.
Okay.
The other prop is the one when it's in the Bacta tank. Not to mix mixed metaphors here, but
oh yeah,
when Porthos is like floating in the Bacta tank, that, and by the way, I read commenters online who noted, you know, clearly it's intended to be like, Phlox has explained, we have to like oxygenate, hydrate, you know, blah blah blah. There's some technobabble reason why we're doing this, but what it looked like was a fucking dead dog suspended in formaldehyde that they're sticking.
There's a hole in his head,
drilling a hole in his
yeah, head. That hole in the head.
There was just a crater in his head, bloody crater.
It was horrifying to watch that.
It was, yeah.
Apparently, some kids who have seen this, some reviewers back in the 2002, were like, my children were horrified because they could immediately tell the difference between the puppet dog, like in that little not the decontamination chamber, but that little enclosure that was in sick bay. Mm. You could tell if it was Porthos because Porthos would be either moving or breathing, but if it was the puppet, it was just a sphinx like.
Yeah.
Posture.
Okay. That, because I know. Yeah. There was one where the dog was like, yeah, the sphinx. That's perfectly put, because there were a few scenes where I saw that dog, and I wanted to cry.
Saw that dog.
Well, the first was when Archer tells at the very beginning when Archer tells Porthos to stay, and he goes and he like he doesn't he give a little woof? Does he give or
he might.
This look.
He goes. He gives this.
You're leaving me in a room.
Yeah, right. And then and so he like looks all confused as Archer's leaving, and then he's looking around, and then he just sits down like okay. And then I was like, oh my god, I want
to
die.
Real quick, I gotta say,
you have to listen to that fucking song
again. I've seen this episode a bunch of times, but you know I'm loading up that episode to watch it for the first time for the podcast. You know, just to review it and. I'm watching it, enjoying it. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this. And then just that last 5 seconds, like all of a sudden, like tears started welling up, and I'm like, I was like, this is a very short preview teaser. This is like fucking a minute long, and I'm already like, bah!
he doesn't know what's happening.
He's like, why are you leaving me, Daddy? Why are you leaving me in the blue room?
And then the first scene with Porthos in the health bio chamber. Which was a little over the top, but it still got me when Archer was like, you hear that, boy? We're all pulling for you. And Porthos looks up and puts his paw on Daddy.
Yes, I saw that. Like, oh, no. God.
And then like when Archer looks over it, and this is one without Porthos in it, but when Archer is in his room and looks over at Porthos' sleepy pad, his sleepy pillow pad, and Porthos isn't there, yeah. I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, no, I know. I was the same.
But then there was one where all paws were outstretched. That was probably the statue. But then, of course, at the very end, of course, when he all jumps out of the bio box into Archer's arms.
Yes.
And it's like he's saying, take me home, Daddy. I want to go home.
And the reading some interviews about that, that was difficult scene. That was a tricky scene because, again, it was complicated by just some production realities. So they had to do a lot of training to get Porthos to do the scene, because part of it was like Porthos had to be chill in the scene and then at the right time get up and jump into Archer's arms. And they did that successfully, but then they added one thing that they said they did not train for, which was Porthos licking Archer's face. And they were like, the way the production crew accomplished that was by rubbing food on Scott Bakula's face. So they just apparently smeared some like bacon grease. No, I think it was like bacon grease or something. But they just smeared on Scott Bakula's face. And the dog is like,
wow, seems so.
Seems pretty wild. Oh, and it also, by the way, this explains how, the so, you know, for our...
Just take something so beautiful and turns it into something so primal and weird. Right.
But you know, when we're doing our marketing, when we're letting people know what episode we're doing, we throw up a little advertisement.
We throw up an advertisement all over the floor. I throw it up all your face.
And I chose the image of Porthos alone in the decontamination chamber.
Oh, God.
And it was the first time. It was the first time we throw this up on, like, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that. And you know, you can get the statistics of, like, how many people are liking your post and all that. And so we're getting all these likes and stuff like that. But there were, like, a bunch of people doing the sad face. Yeah. And at first I was like, wait, why are we getting so many sad faces? And I was like, oh.
Because that scene.
Because people know.
Porthos.
People know that scene.
Oh man!
You didn't even have that reaction with like the Tuvix episode.
No, fuck Tuvix.
So, speaking of training dogs, how many good movies do you think there are of a trained cat? See, cats in movies, there's like Milo and
that darn cat.
But Milo and Otis is super fucked up.
Yeah, that's a fucked up movie. Well,
they were just like throwing cats into rivers.
I don't even want to get into that. It was
cat
horrible.
From outer space or something.
Right. So yes,
Homeward Bound.
Okay. Well, so
The Incredible Journey.
Okay.
I mean, Homeward Bound is a remake of The Incredible
Journey. Okay.
Homeward Bound: The Incredible Journey.
We're naming.
No. Let me stop you right there.
Naming nuts.
Let me stop you right there. Movies like Homeward Bound and stuff like that, that's different because it's not so much animals among people, it's animals among other animals. Now, Jesse was talking about That Darn Cat and stuff like that. That's animals among people. How many animals among people movies do you think there are with cats? And it seems like the ones you named were shit from like, what, the 80s and 70s?
What about Grudge?
70s or 60s.
What about Grudge and Discovery?
What?
Grudge and Discovery.
Yeah,
but Grudge doesn't do a whole lot.
I think partly because he's a cat.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But I mean, back in
she's a queen.
She's a queen. But back in the 60s and 70s, like the ones Jesse was mentioning, there's like at least a couple movies where the cats are actually interacting with people and doing stuff. So remember that Benji goes to West Virginia movie or whatever?
Benji goes to West Virginia. Works in a coal mine.
I never liked to watch those movies with just animals on an adventure. It was always like it was too stressful.
It was too emotional.
There was all this emotion and anxiety. Like
The Incredible Journey.
Why are you showing this?
The Incredible Journey and Homeward Bound.
Why are they showing us?
They're great movies, but But I don't. I'm not showing those to my kids.
No,
I'd watch that darn cat again, though.
I have no problem showing my
Shaggy DA,
my 8-year-old daughter Alien. She loves Alien and X-Files, but I don't want her getting emotionally fucked up from watching Homeward Bound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't
get
her
stressful.
Don't like get her My Dog Skip or whatever, where the little boy owns the dog and something horrible is going to happen to it. I don't know. I've never seen any of those movies. I specifically avoid movies where a boy has a dog or a girl has a dog. Anyways, where some kid has a dog they grew up with and love, because you know at some point that dog's gonna fucking
animal
die.
Animal stuff is always shady. I remember I watched
even Snoopy is kind of a bummer.
I was in Austria as a kid, and I was watching something on the TV.
TV.
All I remember from it was a show about,
what do they call TV in Austria?
Fernsehen. Fernsehen.
They call them the telly, right?
Fernsehen.
The telly.
Fernsehen.
Telly.
No. No, that's Australia. That's Australia. No, but I was watching this show, and all I remember from it was that some blue collar laborer befriended an otter, and the whole thing is about how this guy is friends with this otter, and it's a playful otter. And at the end of the movie or episode or whatever it was, because I have no recollection of what it was, but at the end of it, the otter, he's digging a ditch because, you know, he's like a laborer, and the otter is playing around in the ditch. Aww. And some other guy, like, and I definitely have all these facts wrong, but the main image was at the end of some guy seeing like some otter coming through and just like taking a shovel and just fucking murdering the otter because he thought it was some, like, you know.
See,
and that fucked me
otter,
up.
Yeah, you otter course, be a monster.
That altered the course of my life.
Yeah, that shit. We'll do that, man. It's not cool.
Fucked up. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and wrap things up with odds and ends. All right, we'll be right back. And we're back. It's got Star Trek.
You know,
the podcast.
The podcast.
This is a very rewarding podcast.
Which this very specific one?
What rewards have you received?
Are you talking about this?
It's just been a rewarding experience.
Are you talking about tonight?
Over these 111th episode.
Oh, you meant overall? I thought you meant just tonight.
I think he's playing it off. I think he's picking up some cash on the side.
I've received rewards.
So we were talking about how
my information.
How Phlox was like poking at Porthos's face, and Archer just gotten mad at Phlox because he's doing this never before done sort of surgery or whatever. And while Phlox is doing that, he starts talking to about his crush on T'Pol.
Yeah.
During the middle of the surgery.
Weird.
And which is weird. It's like, if you're that fucking worried, don't distract this guy. I liked when Phlox told him his dog was gonna like blend in with the background.
Yeah, then, that was hilarious.
And then Archer's like, "You're kidding." He's like, "Yes, I am." And you hear he goes,
And the important factor here is so much of the humor in this episode on the page is probably stupid, but because we're dealing with John Billingsley and Scott Bakula, it works.
Yeah,
it really does work, and they're able to like Scott Bakula, going back to his whole, you know, breasts and lips and all the other you know nonsense he was saying. That's stupid. It's stupid, but he makes it fucking.
I'll be the one
work.
Watering their Alvera trees.
You know. I know.
And I like the look T'Pol gives him back after he says that, where she just kind of looks at him for a minute with that T'Pol face.
T'Pol.
After he says face. As if he says lisp and breast and all that, she's just kind of looking at him. It's like, does she know that he's being weird?
She knows.
She knows.
Rick Berman would be like, "Oh, she knows."
Yeah, she wants it.
She knows. Fucking Rick Berman. All right. Next up, odds and ends.
That fucking Phlox smile at the end.
Yeah.
Has he smiled like that in another episode? Is that the one? Is this
he
the
doesn't,
one?
He does it in the pilot, I believe.
Okay. It's the pilot where I've seen that before.
He doesn't do it often. It's because presumably the CGI costs like $10 million or something. Yeah, something ridiculous. But I do like seeing that smile. I like the, okay. We've discussed it before when it probably comes up almost every time we discuss, Enterprise, but the fact that they decided to make Archer obsessed with water polo is endlessly hilarious.
It's so weird,
and I don't think they meant it to be hilarious, but in retrospect, it's hilarious.
You know, actually, in that scene, they cut to the him watching water polo right after he said he was going to water their Alvera tree. If he was like,
wait,
if Porthos,
when is he watching water polo?
He's what in his, but right before he goes, decides to go to sickbay to sleep with Bertha. But and this is not the first time we've seen him just watching water. But there's a whole episode where he's aggravated because he's finally like downloaded like an important water polo match.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to hear who won the water polo match.
Yeah.
He's got that kind of face that looks good, like in some goggles and like a one of those swimming caps. Yeah. Like it look
and some tight speedos.
Yeah.
When
firm and ample penile,
he probably played water polo back in the academy.
Well, when he was talking about if Porthos dies, I'm going to water their Alvera plant, they immediately cut to him playing water polo, and I wonder if that was done on purpose.
I think so.
Because the whole water pee thing.
I don't see a reason why it would be.
It's like...
Why it would be?
It's like he got all worked up thinking about having to pee on somebody's sacred fucking tree. So he's like, I got to watch some water polo
to decompress. I'm endlessly entertained that is what they chose.
Yeah, I know.
And it's bizarre. And I've looked.
I mean, water polo is like, you have to be a pretty badass to be able to do water polo.
I'm in no way denigrating water polo.
It is a bizarre
sport.
It's a workout.
I have a great deal of respect for water polo. That's not my issue.
Water poloists?
The reason I'm fascinated, and I've tried to look this up, and please, listeners, write us in at feedback@discussstartrek.com if you have any information on this, because I have yet to be able to find it with my Google foo, with my Alta Vista foo, which is, why did they pick water polo as his sport of choice, right? Because, okay, Cisco's into baseball, right?
Baseball.
Picard's into MMA, as we know. and so I'm just wondering.
Maybe
what I want to know was it an offhand throwaway pilot thing?
You know what?
That they just were like, somebody liked water. So like, he likes water polo.
Janeway likes roller derby.
Or did they spend like days? Like, we got to figure out what in the future would this guy like?
If they,
in the 2152, what would he like?
If they really planned it out, the only thing I could think is that Scott Bakula is like a quarterback looking type. And maybe in the future, they don't play football.
Right. Because nobody likes football in the future.
Yeah, in the future, because it's bullshit.
Too contest.
Right. Too hot or something. So water polo is the next best thing or something in the future to football. I don't know. But it doesn't really follow.
Not really.
It's
more like volleyball.
There's nothing about Archer's true personality inherent. And again, we're dealing in stereotypes here. And so this is unfortunate territory. But I'm just, I see Archer. I see his attitudes. I see his activities. I don't think water polo.
Yeah.
I think he's into like high lie or something. Or mountain climbing, which we see him doing later. He's all into mountain climbing and
bicycling. And,
See, Archer.
I could see that dude
being
riding
all
a bike
about
up a Mount fucking Everest.
And being like, all intense. And he's one of those dudes that he would ride a bike. Like, if he's all angry, he's like, I'm going to fucking ride a bike.
Yeah,
if
he's going to ride the fuck out of that
But
bike.
If he's in a really good mood, he's like, I'm in a great mood. I'm going to go fucking ride a bike.
Yeah.
He's one of those biking people.
He's all bouncy.
I don't know.
Bouncing down the trail.
Let us know if you know any details about what the logic was behind making Archer into water polo.
DePaul was talking about those outside the Hall of Diplomacy, because he goes, do you recall the stand of trees outside the Hall of Diplomacy? And Archer, because they're trying to figure out what's going on with these people and why they're all pissed off. And he's like,
these people.
What are you talking? Well, he actually says that at one point. What is he saying? Like, he says, like, he goes, I've had it with these people.
So, you're right. You would never write that nowadays. That would not make it out of the cut in.
So when she's talking, and he's like, what are you talking about?
People.
And she's going like, they're Alvera trees, over 300 years old. And he goes, that's fascinating. Did you apologize for whatever we did wrong?
He was sawing that tree like in chunks. Like, that was not a 300-year-old tree.
I don't know. How do we know what they look like?
A 300-year-old tree is huge, dude.
Well, it depends on the tree.
The point
of trees.
What he was doing was what they do when you go to get a Christmas tree.
Yeah, I know.
And they're like, would you like a fresh cut?
Yeah.
And I'm always like, no, I don't need that. No. I can do that at home. Because you're going to do it weird. You're not going to pay attention. You're not going to do it flat. You're going to cut it at some weird angle, and then my tree's going to be all weird.
Well, the point I was just making was that when she was explaining what their deal was, he interrupts her and goes, that's fascinating. Did you apologize for whatever we did wrong? Like, he's being like jerky
again,
ass. And
other captains.
It's like, it's hard to believe that this guy was supposed to be a diplomat.
Well, but to be fair to Archer, he wasn't. I mean, that's not his...
That's what they said he was supposed to be.
In this context, but it's...
Somebody's got a case of the supposed to.
They're figuring this stuff out, right? So they got their Warp 5. They finally got their Warp 5, despite the fucking Vulcans being pieces of shit. And cruising around at like Warp 6 or 7 or whatever. Eventually. But anyway, they got their Warp 5 and they're cruising around.
They can't go nowhere with Warp 5.
He gets to be the captain. Now, another episode which we haven't done yet, which is First Flight... which is also a season two episode, goes into a little bit about who...
The Wright brothers?
Who, well, no. It's about the fucking Enterprise. And I think we'll talk about it soon because it's a great episode, but it's Archer and his friend slash rival, and who's going to get to be the first captain of the Warp 5 ship to go out there. Archer is not necessarily... the top choice. He's not necessarily the right person in the diplomatic side of things, but he might be the better choice in other side of things. So my point being that, again, pre-Federation, Earth just figuring out how to do shit. It's Archer going out there and interacting with people that make them realize that they might need more diplomatic style training.
Right,
yeah. Archer is not... He's not, that was not his intention going out there. He thought, oh, I'll just be nice to people, show up and be like, yo, what's up? Let's hang out.
Right, yeah.
And DePaul
is... Do you like potato chips?
DePaul is there partly... DePaul and water polo. DePaul is there partly to demonstrate... She understands, no, you know, you're going to have to approach different people in different ways, and you have to put up with a bunch of bullshit in order to make, you know, to get along with each other.
Well, like, Tucker at one point goes like, you're a trained diplomat, take the high road. Like,
yeah, yeah, he does. Says that.
But I mean, being a there's being a trained diplomat and being a good diplomat. Those are two fucking different things, right? You know, you can have a degree in whatever, and then you can have like be at the top of the line in whatever. This is
he ain't no Sarek.
It's not just that Archer is not Picard. It's that he doesn't approach that. He doesn't have that philosophical outlook. At least not yet.
It's a different stage in Starfleet.
Yeah,
you know, they're just different.
He learns over time, and again, one of the wonderful things about Enterprise is that over the course of the four seasons, Archer in particular grows and changes as a result of his experiences. And here we're watching him early season two. It's before all the Zindi shit and all that other stuff. He learns over, and this is one of the examples of how he learns.
Every interaction until he finally apologizes to T'Pol near like the last quarter of the episode, every interaction, he's fucking irritable.
Because he's horny.
Phlox says
he's horny.
His dog is dying.
He says he talked to him about the Phlox talking about.
He wants to put his
plasma injected.
He wants to put his penis specifically into a woman. It can be an alien woman as long as nominally a woman, because this is 2002, and men can only have sex with nominal women.
Penis and nominal vagina.
Yeah, Vulcan vagina, Andorian vagina, Cretacean vagina.
I mean, Phlox is telling him about
Calrissian.
Phlox is telling him about the, like, okay, Archer's asking Phlox about how, like, you know, the procedure and the diagnosis and all that shit's going. First of all, I hate that question. I'll tell you if I know it, you know, it's like, I'll tell you, Mike, if I've made progress. Don't ask me if there's any news. I'll tell you if there's news.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's like asking Phlox to explain it. Phlox is explaining it to him, and he's like, in a few hours, we'll have a more detailed prognosis. And Archer's like, before what, doctor? Like, he's just always giving this irritable answer for everything. Even when he asks the question, he doesn't want to know the answer. And it made me think, like, how would Picard act in this exact scenario?
He would not be spending the night in sick bay. He wouldn't have the pet. if he did, for some reason, have the pet, he would just be like, all right, just let me know. And then if the pet died, he'd be like,
Picard, like, is like back with like a book and like some tea or sometimes some whiskey.
It'd be funny if they did an episode of TNG, which was the exact same plot, except it was about like one of Picard's books getting like wine spilled on it.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so Beverly Crusher is spending all night trying to see if she can get the wine out of his...
Because she spilled the wine. Picard doesn't spill wine.
Look, I'm not... come on. I'm not complaining about like his character, the way they wrote his character, because I think it's good. It's just so funny how grumpy he is in this episode.
I think part of the fun.
I think it works. It works. Yeah.
No, that's part of the fun of interacting with Archer is that there's more of a discomfort there because he is not the future evolved hero with the evolved philosophies and evolved whatever.
It seems a little over the top sometimes.
Well, maybe, but at the same time, how many people do you know, and we can even encounter ourselves among this, that might react in similar ways? Not that it's the right way to react. It's just that that might be where we are psychologically.
It's like when you had a long day and then you have to drive all the way the fuck home. You had a long
day.
And you're like driving and you're like, what is this guy doing? Like,
fuck that guy. That guy ruined my day. And you just, you know.
Was there something on their list about apologizing on a full stomach?
Exactly.
So he's.
Paul's seriously tolerant of a shitty attitude, man.
Well, Archer is petulant.
He needs to let up. Needs to fucking drop it, is what he needs
to do. And DePaul also, at this stage in the series in particular, she expects all this stuff. Anytime Archer does this stuff, she's like, you're just feeding into the stereotype I have of all of y'all.
It's all y'all.
That's a quote from T'Pol. All y'all.
T'Pol.
This is expected, and it's not that it's not frustrating to her, but it's also it meets her expectations, which I think is another subtle part of what's going on in a lot of these early Enterprise stories. So T'Pol is learning about humans and learning that some of her views of humans are indeed incorrect. On the other hand, she's also getting many of her views of humans confirmed. And it's a dialectical process where the humans are learning from T'Pol and other aliens and their experiences.
Dialectical.
But T'Pol and Phlox and other people are also learning more about the humans.
Phlox got some kind of duty or something on him. It just said it was, all I could read from the can
the thing
was,
that like spilt on him?
Yeah, it said medical supply emergency something. I don't know what it was, but it seemed like a biohazard and he discovered it.
Archer's worthless. He's got a fucking net. He can't catch the fucking, he's got the doctor's got the bat and you have a net in your hand. Catch the fucking bat.
The giant origami bird.
Are you there to catch the bat or are you there to watch the fucking bat?
And it seemed like that shit, like, I guess Denobulans, he figured out if it was poisonous by tasting
that's
it.
That's not a Denobulan. That's just a classic sitcom joke.
Yeah, right.
And again, it's a joke that on paper probably was stupid, but it worked. To me, it worked because of the actors. But the idea of... I mean, Archer's just like, is it poisonous? And Phlox just licks it and is like, I'll be fine. He doesn't say it's not poisonous. He just says, I'll be fine.
It'll be all right.
I wonder what that stuff is. But yeah, this episode, it kind of gives you all these different facets of Phlox, whereas Archer was just Mr. Grumpster the whole time. Phlox was like wise. He was kind of blundering. He was humorous.
He's scraping his tongue.
Yeah, like he was gross, right? He was gross.
those horrible like things on his toes.
His like yellow. His like yellow. Were they like yellow with black stripes or something? It seemed like he needed to file those down or sand them or something because it's like
his toenails look like salamanders.
Yeah.
It's like when you cut something and there's a big flat edge like that. It seems like you should like, you know, maybe trim it a little bit. But he was
maybe you should be eating those.
Well, he feeds it to the little creatures.
The creatures
just go like,
he's like, but I mean, he's smart. He's basically, there's like a lot of TMI about Phlox, but we get a lot of good stuff about Phlox.
The whole bat catching scene. Again, that's one of the ones that causes some conflict amongst different reviewers of this. But I like the scene. It's stupid, but to me,
it's cool. But it's dumb.
It was silly and funny.
Why do people not like it? Because it's silly.
Yeah, I think some people thought it was a little silly or too sitcom-y, which I agree. I agree with their point. I just don't think it's a problem.
That's just
because,
part of the charm.
Because it was sort of charming. Yes, again, this episode has some disconnected sort of themes and motifs, but independently, to me that worked. And especially, it's always fun when you see the person in authority, in this case Captain Archer, befuddled and he's working in a subservient position to he's not only working in a subservient position to Phlox, because Phlox is trying to explain to him, here's what we got to do. This happens all the fucking time, and here's what we got to do. But he's also fucking up, right? Which makes it even funnier he's the captain.
And then, of course, Ahoshi catches it.
She just catches it. I thought she was going to eat it.
She just walks in the room.
I thought she was going to eat it for a second. Yeah. I thought she was going to just bite its head off and be like, hey, guys, what's up?
So that I would... Incidentally, that the effect they used for that bat to me looked a lot better than the establishing shot of the Enterprise.
Surprisingly good. It holds up to this day.
Yeah,
very good effect.
Which is crazy that looks better than the shot of the Enterprise.
Completely insane.
Cause
it just looks like an albino.
It's totally crazy. Well, because I'm saying, because that should be the easy one. That should be the gimme, is that shot of the Enterprise, but it wasn't.
Yeah. All right, now, odds and ends. Additional odds and ends.
No, that's it.
I've got it. Let me see here, because we talked about the
we do that too.
Tongue scraping. I don't do that.
You do that?
No, I'm saying, but people are supposed to scrape their tongue.
No, there's
people are supposed to floss too.
Well,
there's a great that Mitchell and Webb sketch where it's a board meeting of a toothpaste company, and they're all like, "We've hit a plateau of people buying toothpaste," and one guy's like, "Here's an idea. What if we tell them they should brush their tongues too?" And everyone's like, "That sounds crazy. Nobody will buy into it." It's great tongue scraping.
You get tongue cavities if you don't scrape your tongue.
I was thinking it must suck to have to be like to be an actor and have to do a scene where you have to pretend to be running faster and faster and faster. You know that scene took they filmed this whole episode in like 6.5 days, but.
Do you think they move their legs, or do you think they're just like...
Well, you can tell when Archer and T'Pol are running, like, at the same time. Like, on the one hand, yeah, they're running. They have to run to act. But, like, when they're running, quote-unquote, faster...
Wait,
like,
where do you... What scene are you talking about?
The treadmill scene.
Okay. Yeah.
They're running on treadmills and upping the speed. And so, like, on the one hand, they are exerting energy by pretending to run. But... when they're quote unquote running faster, they don't look like they're running faster. They push the button and the sound goes woo 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 woo. But if you look at them, they're not like running faster.
They're probably just more jumping up and down, more going whoomp whoomp.
Do people still use treadmills?
Yeah, all the
like
time.
Those Pelotons.
You mean in the future or not? Well, Peloton's just a treadmill. I mean, offense. I know somebody who works for Peloton.
Well, they're bikes.
There's the bike. Well, yeah. Difference. Well, they have a treadmill too.
Yeah.
Peloton.
Well, then there's also
it's the nicer version of it. Some of them eat up children, but like, we won't mention that.
There's ellipticals, but people swear by treadmills over ellipticals a lot of times, unless you have bad joints, in which case you'd go on elliptical. But the treadmill is supposed to be more
body. If you smoke weed, it sucks if you have bad joints.
What if Archer was...
Because they like canoe and shit.
What if Archer was a captain on weed?
They run.
A captain on weed? On the television show Weeds?
No.
You mean if he was just high all the time?
No. I'm not questioning your plot.
So you're asking me to reformulate...
Like if he was drinking marijuana.
You're asking us to reformulate the entire sort of scope of Enterprise if the one change that was made was that Captain Archer was just constantly smoking joints?
Yeah, or he was just
There's
on weed.
There's weed in that nebula. He was just on There's some serious doom in that nebula.
Maybe that's why he's like, I really want to go warp 5. I hear something, got some like, crazy, awesome snake leaf out there.
I like the line, I'm not questioning your pluralities, I'm questioning your priorities, because it's a fun thing, weird, hard thing, difficult thing to say.
Yes.
It's almost like
a tongue twister.
Jolene Blaylock is, she's really good. I mean, she really is good, and I feel bad that she did not have because of Berman and other people, you know, had issues on this show. And it's unfortunate because she really does a fantastic job as T'Pol, and particularly as the series goes along. Like we did the Carbon Creek.
Yeah,
we did that. I can't remember. Yeah. It was a while back. We covered that episode, but brilliant stuff. And there's a lot of hints of that here in her interactions with.
Yeah, well, like I was saying, when Archer had the Polarian slip, and she just kind of looked at him for a minute before she walked off. Like, even though it was like, you know, deadpan Vulcan face, the way she conveyed it, there definitely was expression to it.
All right, odds and ends. Denobli and Liebers most have one head.
Yeah,
probably my favorite line of the whole episode. It's a subtle line.
Most of them,
but Phlox saying like, yeah, the Denobli and lemurs, they're they
it's
have
the closest four. Thing to
like,
a dog.
He was like, they have a tail, fur, and most of them have one head.
But they're not pets. They eat their kidneys.
I was wondering. I forgot. I also liked.
You can make a nice kidney pie out of it.
You need a lot of Denobli and lemurs for that.
Really? But you think they're small?
Well, I don't know.
Lemur's not that big, so how? I guess his kidney. Yeah, you're gonna have to.
It depends.
It's not like a beef kidney. It's
well,
a beef kid.
It's like a rat kid.
It's like a beef kid. Are you a beef kid?
I'm a beef kid. Fidgety Archer. Fidgety Archer. Where he's all pissed off and he's in sick bay and he does that thing where he's like all pacing around and then he sits down but immediately gets back up and is all hoving around sick bay. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Any other odds and ends?
He didn't sleep for that much.
He did not do much sleeping.
There was one scene where I think he only slept for like 15 minutes.
Well, he slept for an hour. You know, he fell asleep, had a bad dream.
Yeah, I was trying to remember.
Phlox was like,
he had a bad dream.
You slept almost an hour.
Yeah, there was another time he fell asleep.
Oh, speaking of the dog funeral dream where they had some headstones. They had some headstones for other dogs like Goldie and I forget the other one. I'm wondering, those might have been Archer's other dogs, because one presumes that he had other dogs as a dog lover. But I just wanted to comment on Archer's overcoat during that funeral was real fucking on point. It was like, it was a real, because it looked like a future slick.
Everybody overcoat. Actually was very nice.
Yeah,
and dressed
they all were, but that stuck out at me. Yeah. Standing in the
especially,
rain,
especially Archer.
Somebody was telling me that
who was it
at the end of the
who was telling you this?
I think Justin was telling me Justin. Someone was telling me that at the end of the night at Atlantic City at the bars, they always play that song. It's like, you had a bad night, because it's all gambling and everyone lost their money. And if you're last calling it at the bar in Atlantic City, you probably don't have any money left. And that's
Atlantic City's rough, dude. Yeah, you ever been to Atlantic City?
No.
You don't have
heard about it.
You don't have
check,
to
you gotta check that shit out.
They're all like, the bartender's all like, you don't have to not commit suicide, but you can't commit suicide here. all right. Anything else? Otherwise, should we wrap it up for this particular episode? And
I think we could wrap it up.
All right. So that was A Night in Sick Bay. Next week,
I guess they haven't finished compiling their list of punishments.
Next week,
I'm sorry. I'm just practicing.
Sorry.
Just practicing.
Next week. Next week, we're going to go and we're going to go do some TOS because Discovery is still on break. We'll get back to Discovery once it comes back. We're watching Prodigy in the meantime. We'll probably do some sort of amalgamated discussion of
that episode of Prodigy was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, the last one was I really enjoyed that. Next week is going to be TOS Mud's Women season one. I don't know, episode six or something
way,
like that.
Way back.
Mud's Women. TOS,
a different era of horribleness.
Tune in Paramount Plus or whatever other means you have for watching elderly Star Trek episodes and watch Mud's Women. We'll be discussing that next week. In the meantime, you may get in contact with us by emailing
maybe not
to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. You can get us on social media at It's Got Star Trek on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can subscribe to us on YouTube. Any podcast player that you like, tell your friends, tell your family, tell people who you work with. Ideally, you know, just tell them that this is a good podcast and you should be listening to
it. Do you like podcasts? Do you like Star Trek?
I think I said all the things I'm supposed to say at the end, right? That's everything, right?
I think this was a good one.
Yeah, it was good enough. They can't all be winners.
they're not all the best.
All right. So anything
did we
else?
Thank our audience or anything?
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, audience.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
As always.
Sincerely. From the bottom of our hearts.
The thanks go without saying.
The heart on our bottoms. I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
How do you tittle it an ocelot?
You ocelot a tits a flot?
No, you oscillate its tits a lot. Yeah.
What kind of an oyster?
Flot a lot of split.
A noisy noise annoys an oyster.
Yeah, all right. These are indicators that we have concluded this episode. You'll hear more of this business next week, next Saturday. So until then, have a good one.
You can pick your friends and you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose.
Friends' noses.
Hey, Dan, are you going to the movies? Because I can see you're picking your seats.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody. Bye-bye. That's enough. Bye-bye.
Let me ask you a question, Doc. Just out of curiosity. Are there any dogs on your home world?
The Denobulan lemur is highly sought after. It's not exactly a dog, but you could say it's dog-like. It has tail, fur. Most have one head.